The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald, and gold, although crowded by their consorts who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces. They cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. Okay. And of course, right away we think about, because we're traveling so much, you know, a fair amount. And you take the airplanes, and the airplanes aren't made of lapis lazuli, gold, and emerald. They're made of aluminum, rubber, and maybe leather. Yeah. And you're not crowded by beautiful consorts, but you're crowded by all kinds of people. That, you know, it's crowded too, no? Economy class is really crowded. Yeah. Okay. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the material world, opulences are achieved by materialistic persons by dint of their labor. So Prabhupada's going to focus on the description of the airplanes to start with. One cannot enjoy material prosperity unless he works very hard to achieve it. So here's if we take Prabhupada's statements as just being fact, you know, even if, my God, just one purport, you know, will be enough to manage your entire life. He also says someplace else that actually you cannot be prosperous without cheating, materially prosperous, like that. Yeah. So not only do you have to be work hard, yeah, but you also have to be a cheater. Yeah. And if you're a cheater, then you're going to be cheated later on. And you'll, how can you complain about it? Okay. So it sounds like this is not a very good place to work. Yeah. But the devotees of the Lord, who are residents of Vaikuntha, have the opportunity to enjoy a transcendental situation of jewels and emeralds. Yeah. And our picture here, we looked up emeralds. And, of course, it's a naturally growing stone. And they cut them into all these, you know, what's the word, like highly Euclidean geometric forms and stuff, which don't look very attractive usually. But you see them in their natural forms, like growing crystals and stuff. Oh, it looks so nice. Yeah. And also look at pearls, different kinds of pearls and so on. So these jewels, I imagine, if they're done properly, hung properly, you know, can look very nice. Yeah. Yeah. And the point is to, too, is understand that devotees, Prabhupada says, every single corner of our temples is Vaikuntha. Yeah? So wherever there's an ashram, wherever the deities are installed, wherever Krishna is there and being properly worshipped, then it automatically becomes Vaikuntha. Some distance around the deity, maybe somebody has more information about this, installed deity is actually under that deity's control. So if you bring your deities into that area, they actually become that deity. They join with them, and the service of the local deity will be accepted by your deity. In Manipur, the distance that you can hear the conch shell from the temple is considered to be under the control of that deity. So the main temple with Radha Govinda temple, this big competition, you know, of generations passing on property to try and be within the sound of the conch shell. And then we can expect, you know, that we don't have to work hard and we don't have to cheat to get opulence. Because then the opulence we're enjoying, of course, we're enjoying by using the opulence for Krishna. Yeah? And vastu, you know, one of the ways to realize God, vastu veda, ayurveda, gandharva veda, danda veda. But vastu veda is such a nice thing. You start getting into it. You know, vastu is for the universe, vastu is for your nation, vastu is for your city, vastu is for the park, vastu is for your house, vastu is for your room, vastu is for your desk. You know, where things are situated, what the reaction will be in your, the natural reaction in your mind. And in incoming and outgoing basket, water jar, you know, computer, fire, you know. And so when you can actually do these things for Krishna, architecture for Krishna, oh, so nice. One of the most famous places I know of is Gaudi's Divine Family Temple in Barcelona. And look, it's incredible. It was maybe partially finished. And then during World War II, I think Barcelona was bombed or something. So he was gone and the plans were destroyed. And so maybe somebody will find some sketches or something. But he did a very radical thing. You can look at it, Gaudi, Barcelona. And it's a very beautiful, beautiful temple. You go there, it makes you feel like you know, Vaikuntha, like so many different little places up in the sky where angels are going to be hanging out and things like that. I talked to an atheist one time, architect, and he said, Hanuman Swami, he said, even the biggest atheist in the world would love to have a contract to build a church, a cathedral. Because even if there is no God, it's the greatest way to think about things. So devotees have all this opulence, but they use it. The verses will go on here, okay? They enjoy a transcendental situation of jewels and emeralds. Ornaments made of gold, bedecked with jewels, and achieved not by hard work, but by the benediction of the Lord. In other words, devotees, are achieved not by hard work, but by the benedictions of the Lord. In other words, devotees in the Vaikuntha world, or even in this material world, cannot be poverty-stricken, as sometimes supposed. So in that picture here, we have people pushing a fish cart, looks like. Hard work. Even down to the point of sunset or sunrise, they're still working there, pushing the darn thing. Yeah, yeah. So, it's, you know, Narada Muni, how much do you need? He has his vina, and I guess it's about all he needs, you know. Maybe counting on a little surprise in terms of his lunches and places like that and so on. And his vina, of course, is a benediction of the Lord. Yeah, it can't be separated from it. Yeah. The property will always return to the owner, especially if it's awarded by Krishna. So this is, what do we need? Achihara prayasascha prajalpa niyamagraha. This is in the verse, Nectar of Instruction 2. Prabhupada especially emphasizes achihara, talking on about how over-collecting. And of course, over-collecting requires over-endeavor. Yeah? And the whole thing is based upon loilam, hankering for these things. So if we can find out how to get free from the hankering for things we don't need for Krishna's service, then we can really start taste serving Krishna. And of course it becomes easy to control the mind and senses because they're getting a higher taste than serving Krishna. One of our friends, David Presta, he almost has an initiated name. His wife is Kalindi, she's initiated. They live in Sacramento, California, and they asked him to build a portable altar, you know, so when they go out, they can have an altar. And he used to do some construction work. So it was incredible, you know, he used bhakta like that. But to do all this for Krishna and design it and use all of his different skills and stuff like that and so on. So such satisfaction. Can we be engaged all the time in Krishna's service so we never have to come down like that? In using all this opulence for Krishna. And Prabhupada says, they have ample opulences for enjoyment, but they need not labor to achieve them. Okay. So that's the Vaikuntha world we're hearing about. It's such a... the material world is a reflection, but there everything is... What's the word? Pro bono? Okay, then Prabhupada goes on. It is also stated in the Vaikuntha world, the consorts of the residents are many, many times more beautiful than we can find in this material world, even in the higher planets. So down below we have some pictures of some physical beauties, and there's a very beautiful mare. And, well, one time Prabhupada says, it's like one purport, he says that girls on the earthly planets, in comparison to girls on the heavenly planets, look like horses, like that. So, of course, a girl is very, very what? Very, one second, my robot's falling asleep. Okay. Girls are, of course, very, very nice, very satisfied if they have a nice complexion. Okay. Nice skin, you know. But, you know, what is it if you say, oh, yeah, Mary, your hair is like a, your skin is like a mare's skin. You have skin like a horse. Right. And you have hair like a horse. Oh, how nice. Yeah. The insult. Yeah. And I was taught by my high school English teacher. Somebody said that some of the girls were sweating, you know, or something. And he corrected this with, I guess, you know, 1950s English and said, horses sweat, men perspire, and ladies glow. It was very hot in the afternoon on the veranda, and the ladies were fanning themselves and glowing. Yeah. But this is the imagination. And of course, you know, horses, when they can stink like anything, of course, when they perspire. But here it's saying that the ladies in Vaikuntha are more subtle and more fine than the ladies in the celestial world. And of course, I guess ladies in our planetary system, you know, if you have some consciousness, you realize this is all ridiculous, you know. Yeah. The ephemeral sex desire, the sannyasi. If you're a grihastha, you have to be able to, you know, have some kind of passion in your life, mostly. If you're going to have children and struggle to maintain your society and come home and after a hard day's work and the kids look nice, the wife looks nice, the house looks nice, it's opened up with fresh shower and bowls of flowers and it's all ready for you to take a refreshing bath and then sit in your afternoon clothes and this and that, you know. So you have to have some kind of mode of passion to pretty much to go on. If you go in the mode of goodness, you're going to end up being a brahmana or a vanaprastha, or then finally, you know, sannyas, or a civil widow at that point, you know. Then, of course, it's very easy. You take a little physiology. If you get it, I took a separate division mammalian physiology courses at the University of California. It's very nice, you know, maybe you can give some classes like that. One thing they're doing in Seattle, so you can start anywhere, is the university, what's it called? Hare Krishna University or something. And what they're doing is having anybody who has any teaching skills and any ability who wants to teach, they're arranging courses. So if somebody's a plumber in the community, he gives a course and just finds out what kind of people he has and maybe teaches you how to turn off the water and change the washer in your sink, you know, or how to deal with a plumber and not get cheated or what's possible. And so it's really incredible because then people start coming and giving these classes and they don't have to go other places then. Of course, you can get good software training, and if, of course, it expands like that, it can expand into a full educational program. But right away, devotees, they catch up the essence of everything, you know. So we have these classes, and so physiology would be a very nice class, you know. And, it, you know, the, actually the graphics. But again, we mentioned this point that basically we're all bags of leather, you know, with majority as being lungs and intestines, and then the thoracic cavity there. And you can buy different kinds of scalpels, and it's like cutting leather. You've got to give a firm press and come right down the center. Maybe a couple horizontal things, and you can pull the tissue right off. And then the intestines, you can pull the intestines out and hang them out and wash them, I guess. Something like 20 feet of small intestines. And you got your large intestines, ascending, transverse, and descending, at the colon and the rectum. And before that, you got the duodenum and, you know, the actual stomach and the trachea, whatever it is, going on up there. And the lungs, they come out, again, the same thing. And that's most of it. You got the circulatory system and everything else like that and so on. And so you can cultivate this consciousness. And, of course, if you're a sannyasi or if you're aiming towards the mode of goodness or brahmacharya, then, of course, you should cultivate this consciousness, you know, prominent, you know. So, you know, moving around, of course, you know, as a sannyasi, moving in ordinary culture, I go to Walmart or, you know, some kind of place like that. And you see, you know, many times, young girls with fresh complexion, radiating with all the hormones are pumping energy into their skin, you know. So it's radiating, but your mind, your intelligence automatically kicks in and say, okay, scalpel down the middle, you know, open it up. You realize it's just, yeah. Then for me, then at this level, there's this whole question about how, you know, the femininity is being projected. Because it's like the cell phone. You can see a picture, you can talk, but behind it's all the apparatus, you know, which is not like what you're actually experiencing, the picture and the sound, which is a very, very thin part of the thing, very thin covering. But somewhere there is a person, there is like something which is being projected, the real form. So what's being projected And that takes you right away onto the psychological level. And you're looking then, careful not to contemplate too much here, because maybe not quite, realized. Contemplating a little bit and carefully. Okay, then the beautiful face, the nice attitude, the sweet form. For example, so many times I hear a girl saying, oh, she's sweet, But if I was saying that, Narahari is really sweet, but Mohan and Ramananda, they're both two sweet guys, Right away, sounds a little suspicious, like that. So this is what we're looking at, and then we're not looking at the sweetness. One guy said he liked masculine fragrances like, B.O. and ketchup. Those are masculine smells, out there. Beating it out on the football field or working in the fields and smell those masculine smells and ketchup, So the different kinds of projections. And of course, ladies maybe are attracted to BO and ketchup in a sense of like, he's a real man, But this is what's going on. We have the visual attraction. We have the olfactory attraction. Yeah, and it works. It's very intense, the smelling, so on. So this is Sankhya. We can go through this and get liberation. And then we'll take you, of course, to the psychological level and the Varna Ashram system. And Varna Ashram is actually a part of the Virat Roop. It's actually a material thing, Western knowledge kind of stops itself at mass and velocity, time and space. But beyond that, we're saying that these Varna Ashram Dharma, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and Lady, Stri, Woman, these are all a part of the Varna Ashram system. And so different levels there. So if some woman's looking at you, one Ayurvedic doctor in Peru, Rupanuga, he showed these, he also does a physiognomy. Because now we get the face. So, okay, the face is looking at us. You open that up, also you got the muscles behind it. It's not very beautiful. If you, down below here, we have Shirley Temple and Miss America. Miss Universe, okay. But same thing, you open up Miss Universe's face and peel it off, and it won't be so attractive. Universe Shirley Temple. You get the muscles that move the skin, to make the forms like that, make the impressions. So, but if we look at the actual communication, don't be so materialistic. Oh, you're just a pessimist. You're weird. Okay. If I'm weird, then Socrates is also weird. And also Jesus Christ, Solomon, Moses, Confucius, so many people. We got a really good substantial club here. Oh, you're weird, Yeah, maybe in the modern sense, the local sense, but in terms of the broader people, the people that respect, they're all saying the same thing, that it's just a superficial bag, okay? So, but, yeah, there is. If you pull back to the thin candy covering, there is something there, okay? And let's focus on that, okay? So then we get physiognomy. And physiognomy, especially focusing on the face and the smile and the perspective like that, and glances and smiling and, shobha, brilliant, like that, So anyway, Rupanuga did this physiognomy thing. And he was taking like these famous movie stars and stuff in Peru, and he was taking just the eyes, and boy, that was spooky, like that, just the eyes. Because, of course, especially, I did this one time in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, maybe evening program, maybe like 60 people there for class, and I asked the women, how many women here use makeup? And it was almost everybody. I think a couple of them, they were more like, they were naturally endowed. Because sometimes, I think often, I think ladies, many times the eyebrows are not so prominent. So if you don't pencil them in, you end up looking like, some kind of cadaver thing from, from extraterrestrial like that. So you got to like fill in your eyebrows or something, or pluck the, the mustache, So there's the work. Then I asked the men, I said, don't be shy. How many men here use makeup? Nobody raised their hand. Maybe there were a couple of guys who were using makeup. But yeah, you use aftershave and you pick your glasses out and you shave and stuff, Yeah. But you can see there's a much more difference, much more tendency towards the mode of passion. And right, well, and ignorance in a female form like that. Yeah. So whatever we got, we use it in Krishna's service. So then we got the physiognomy, which is a whole science, of course, in the Vedas. The rishis right away, by looking at the physiognomy of Sukadeva Goswami, could understand his elevated position. So you can look at people, their faces, their foreheads, their structure, these kind of things, and understand the consciousness. Yeah, yeah. But then the consciousness, many times when you start looking at it that way from a little detached perspective, don't get, you know, carried away by it. A man can see that a woman is out to exploit him. Her feminine features are very attractive, everything else, catch him, you know. But, you know, the purpose is not to give pleasure, you know, but to use the pleasure in such a way as to get back a profit, you know, profit, adoration, and distinction, you know. He'll give me a car. He'll give me kids who will take care of me when I'm old, you know. He'll take me out to dinner. He'll give me the opulence of jewels and furs and, you know, let me go to health spas in the evening, you know, so that I can be the envy of all the other ladies, all the other women. Oh, my sister, she's really going to be envious when she sees I have two more boys than she does. Yeah. So we've been discussing this through this week with very, very nice classes. Ramananda was mentioning I could give some sannyas dharma on this class. Okay, so we go beyond that, then we see the ladies in the mode of passion. They're there for a certain reason. The facial features and everything else, the brilliant smiles, are there for a purpose. And they may not even be so conscious of it, actually, like that. They're intoxicated by their own, you know, beauty, their own potency and stuff, and not even so much focusing on their slaves, how they brought them under their control. You know? Don't even see them as people, really. In the mode of goodness, of course, then there's more. Then it becomes obvious what it is. We were doing the Brajmandal Parikrama many, many years. You mentioned that. And you go out in the fields. There's no toilets. There's no. And you have to go out and do your business in the field with your bucket. You know? And you're working every day, walking every day in the pretty hot sun. You know? And so, you know, there were five devotees who were German infantry soldiers. 1 year, and they said if you could do this parikrama, you could be a German infantry soldier. Yeah. So after about 4 or 5 days in the parikrama, all the ladies start to look like German infantry soldiers. The first few days, got making sure the Dobiwalas got their saris washed on time, you know, and making sure that they're made up properly and you know, and talking in a friendly fashion with the gentlemen, you know. But after a few days, you know, you've got to fight diarrhea, you got to keep a very simple diet, you got to work hard, you got to get the thorns out of your feet. You're walking off with two more ladies into the bushes, and everyone knows where you're going with your buckets. You know, it's like, it becomes very, very purifying. And then, of course, it starts to get this subtle psychological aspect, you know, that the men then are attracted to the ladies because there's subtle psychological differences. You know, they're listeners. You know, they have different kinds of feminine responses, which attracts the male ego. You know, they're submissive. The male ego is most satisfied when it's dominating the female ego. Okay, so subtly, a little bit, whatever. Oh, Prabhu, I didn't know that. Oh, thank you. Are you sure? Oh, okay. Yeah. Then beyond that, we finally come to the point where, you know, the whole thing turns around. This, of course, is the final attraction is dominating the female ego. In a subtle sense, giving up sense gratification, yeah? Becoming Lord Shiva, yeah? Yeah? And Parvati becoming your wife. Yeah? Then you give that up, then we turn around. Shuddhasattva is neutrality, extreme neutrality, extreme peace, you know, no distress, everybody, agitation by the opposite sex. As a sannyasi, I was traveling in India, and after being there maybe for 1 month, I suddenly realized that I hadn't really talked to a single woman the entire time I was there. Hadn't talked. During classes, after a class, you know, some lady might come up, either with her grown-up son or her husband, and say, my mother, my wife has a question about your class. And so I could actually talk through him, but as they were Westerners, sometimes. In the end, you could see that the actual lady wanted her husband to present the question, yeah. But Western ladies, they wanted to be able to talk about it themselves in, you know, a nice fashion. They had a question, okay. And a husband or son was there and be participating. Okay. And that was it. And for 1 month, and I was realizing, wow, this has been very peaceful, you know, for my body not to have this agitation. And I suspect the same thing, as you become a purified devotee, the same thing is there. You want also, ladies also get the same thing of just this peacefulness. And they become like Purnamasi, you know, they become like Advaita Thakurani, you know, and they come to a position of Vedavati, like Gandhari, you know, so many nice examples of how to do this thing from a female body and do your service. You know. And then at that point, we all just, then the thing is no longer any stimulus for taking, now the stimulus is all for giving, like that, you know, and giving more and more. It's such a, in some ways, incomprehensible experience. But as you give more, of course, you realize that you have more to give. Things you never even knew you could do start coming out. So we start self-realization and discovering qualities that we didn't know we had, abilities we didn't know we had. And even while we're in this world, of course, we can use our psychophysical makeup and start discovering kinds of service that our body can do that we didn't know we can do. We didn't know we could play music. We didn't know we could write poetry. We didn't know that we could organize people, that they would respect us. Yeah? So it is stated that in the Vaikuntha world, the consorts of the residents are many, many times more beautiful than we can find in this material world, even in the higher planets. It is specifically mentioned here that a woman's large hips are very attractive. And they stimulate man's passion. Okay. Mares also have large hips. But the wonderful feature of Vaikuntha is that although the women have large hips and beautiful faces, and are decorated with ornaments of emeralds and jewels, the men are so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that the beautiful bodies of the women cannot attract them. Because they realize this is all for Krishna. If Lakshmi and Narayan give a dinner party, nothing but brahmacharis and sannyasis come. It's pretty boring. Like that. Yeah. But if there's a lot of couples there for joking and so on, yeah, then it becomes a very, very pleasant thing. You know. So the couples in Vaikuntha are there, and these things are there. It describes, of course, Krishna and Arjuna and Dwarka. Everybody's throwing butter at each other in these ghee fights and on, and ladies, because your body is, sorry, is becoming wet, and their feminine features are becoming manifest. And it says that those who were not pure were becoming lusty. And the Krishna book says that pure males and females can engage in these things without lust. You know, and water fights with yogurt. Yeah. Vaikuntha ki jai. Okay. So here we got some pictures here. We got bulls and cows. You can see the pictures. Here's some cow. Cow is like looking at the bull there. My God, what a man, you know. And she's so agitated, she's licking her nose. Okay. And next we got cocks and hens. Okay, and all the hens are maybe running because the cock's on the walk. Yes. Roosters. Yeah. What else we got? Oh, yeah, lions and lionesses. See that picture's there. The guy, his lion's off making his run there. Yeah, and all the lionesses are looking, wow, what a man. So this is the, whether you are cocks and hens, bulls and cows, lions and lionesses, what do you call it, mallards, drakes, and whatever they're called, you know, and every species, gods and goddesses, this attraction is there, but it's a reflection, and trying to enjoy a reflection is what we're doing. And so you want satisfaction. Yeah? But as soon as you try and serve, even the reflection becomes delightful. Okay. And finally, we have here the human form. We have, Vivian Leigh and Cloud Rains in the 19-something or other version of Caesar and Cleopatra. There's a famous love story. Then we have Giulietta e Romeo. Giulietta e Romeo. with and he's just about to plunge his dagger into his heart, which shows you the enjoyment that you get. This is the highest enjoyment, right? It's the most famous love story, Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. How's it go? In fair Verona, where we lay our scene, two families both alike in dignity, from ancient grudge, break forth to new mutiny, and civil blood makes civil hands unclean. This is the introduction to Romeo and Juliet. It finishes off and it says, never was there such a tale of woe as that of Juliet and Romeo. Yeah. Shakespeare had a way with words. I know I was in high school, I think, when one of these big, the most famous one came out. They did a really passionate job with it. Had the actress play Juliet flashing her body, like her back. One moment, very quick, But they did a really, really could see, the whole attraction and the manifestation like that. Good actors, good actresses. I later heard that she was actually a lesbian. Interesting. So on. But anyway, it was going on, and of course, it's a whole thing with just tears flowing copiously at the end. And it was a place we went in to see it with my friend Richard Weigel. And these three girls, they were like hiding out. When they would empty the theater, and the ushers would come and look, it was empty. Okay, they let the next crowd in. These girls would duck down, and we'd talk to them. And they had seen it three times, something like that. And they were just staying there to get into the fall of this thing, of this ocean of tears again and again, to enjoy this subtle thing. Because that's the highest happiness. Pingala the prostitute, she says that frustration is the highest happiness. So Romeo and Juliet, they get a little taste of it, and it's going to be so wonderful. And then, she dies, and he dies. It's all because of a misunderstanding. It's a subtle, they missed it by such a subtle thing like that, so forth and so on. So the subtle attraction to the subtle pleasure. And then down below we have Napoleon and Josephine. That's all I could think of. I couldn't come up with more than three famous love stories. And everybody knows that Napoleon and Josephine was not a love story. He married her basically because of her royal blood, and then she couldn't supply kids, and so he married somebody else or something like that, did something, tried to get rid of her. So this is kind of our summary on Jewels and Thrones. And I had a wonderful thing, maybe a little bit about Rod Ostomy, of course. It's very nice because Rod Ostomy is the exact example of the most beautiful girl and, young girl, and the most innocent, the most chaste, the most pure, and with no idea of exploitation, like that. So any questions or comments by anybody like that?
Just a moment, Maharaj. I need to unmute everybody.
I have a couple of comments.
Okay.
A lot of noise in the background.
Harsh. You got to mute your microphone. Oh, he got it. Okay.
There you go. I did.
We got it. Oh, okay.
So a couple of quick comments. Boy, I really liked your description. Your analogy kind of sounded like Madan Mohan. You gave the example of the telephone, the cell phone with a little thin. Gosh, I guess it's the layer of what we see, the beautiful picture is probably so thin you can't even calculate the thickness of it. And you were drawing that as analogy as, the beauty of the face and really what's behind it. So just like in the phone, there's all this electronic gizmos and the beauty of a man or a woman. It's just a bunch of muscles and connective tissue and bones and cartilage behind it. But that thin little layer, it's just so intoxicating and alluring and mystifying. So, like you said, you be careful what we're looking at. One thought from my days of zoology regarding perspiration and bodily odors. Perspiration, just this is sort of a side anecdote, perspiration has no odor at all. What happens is the salts and the all the moistures that come out with perspiration mixed with a bacteria that's already on the skin, and that bacteria grows very quickly in that media of the perspiration, which creates the odor. But actually, pure perspiration doesn't have any scent at all.
Well, maybe we can bottle the stuff like that and sell it, pure perspiration.
Anyway, just a little note.
Then we get I know cats, you know, they have scent glands. You know, they're actually behind the ears, on the tail. And, of course, those are probably mixed with the, I don't know how that works. You know, is it an oil or something? Or is it actually mixed with the perspiration when it's actually applied like that? You know, because they rub their head on you to mark you. And so they have some kind of odor-producing glands, which maybe, you know, does not, maybe, I don't know how it's interesting. Well, the more you talk about it and know how it works, and the less like, you know, as a word, like, bewildering it is, you know.
Well,
one thing
I know about odors is it's like if you smell like some stool, actually what's happening is smell, there's little molecules that are traveling in the air, and those molecules of stool actually enter into your nostrils and they stimulate the olfactory nerve. And so it's almost like you're tasting it in a sense. You're smelling actually little bits of whatever you're smelling. It's not just like the substance is over there and I'm over here and smelling it. The substance is actually contacting us. So it's actually molecules, the molecules that to stimulate that olfactory nerve.
And they fit into little keyways, like that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, physiology.
Great class. Yeah, you're on fire today.
Yesterday with Lalita's appearance day, of course, we're in Lalita's group. She's 1 year older than Radharani, minus 2 days. She's the leader. She's the boss. You know, she's a big girl. She knows how all about life. You know, when Radharani's been hurt, Krishna's like, you know, joking with Chandravali or something. And then, you know, Lalita tosses her chatter over her shoulder and goes off to give Krishna a piece of her mind. When Krishna sees her coming, he just, you know, oh my God, he heads out of town like that. Yeah. So she's expert, you know, we're using words and sarcasm and everything else, you know. Jai. And of course Ananda Rupa Manjari is of course our group. Yeah. Then Advaita Thakurani, that Gaur Sundar was saying that in Krishna Lila she's Purnamasi. I guess Radha Krishna Ganadesha Deepika. So Purnamasi, then incarnates as Advaita Thakurani. So of course Purnamasi is like the stage manager, you know. She runs the whole show and keeps everything going, which of course sometimes right in the middle of the performance you got to make adjustments and fly things in and do all kinds of stuff. So she has a fantastic job. So maybe in Garanga Leela she's also there running the show and, you know, like that. And so, of course, tomorrow is Radhastami. And the, I guess tomorrow, the whole class like that, discussing how Radharani appeared. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, very nice. So does it. Lord Chaitanya tastes nectar in the Antalila. That's so much, you know. Radha Bhava, and the verses are incredible. Some of the verses. And those things, of course, the Chaitanya Charitamrita should be made into an opera, right? Should be made into an opera with like demonstrations and the songs and the music and stuff like that. And just, you know, maybe in 1 year or something, or a couple of years, you could like appreciate the whole thing like that or something. You know, so much opportunity. And then Prabhupada says everything will happen automatically. The trees, when you get off the main highways on these back roads, it seems the trees and everything else are much more healthy, the colors and everything else. So then fruits and everything else coming, and the cows. You're playing with the cows and simultaneously getting milk, you know. And so it becomes play, you know, with nature to produce all the things we need for the body, you know. And then why stay anyway? If we're becoming so purified, why not just, you know, just give up this body and go back, get out of the theater and go see the real thing, you know. Which would you rather see or do? Go to a movie about Bill Gates or go to take a dinner invitation to go and have dinner with Bill Gates? Like that.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the class. I have a little more zoology or physiology to add, and that is actually if a woman is sick because of a hormonal difficulty, they give her mare urine. That's the medicine called Premarin. It's called Premarin because it's made from mare urine.
Haribol.
But I thought Srila Prabhupada compared women to frogs. I thought all the women in the material world looked like frogs compared to the women.
Is one purport. I guess you can make a variety of comparisons, you know. Yeah. The one purport. I forget where it is. It's just that one purport and frog. I guess it's describing, where is it? Maybe one of these heroes is seeing one of the women. And Prabhupada says that unlike in the purport, like women on this, she's a celestial woman, and women on the earth planets look like horses compared to the ladies in the higher up in the celestial world. Yeah, frogs.
If that's all true, what do men look like? We must look like some horrible,
like
distorted
stallions.
Toads or something.
Stallions, I guess. Toads and stallions. Yeah, yeah. That's why it's nice because we do these Bhakti Bhai Baba programs, you know, and. Because we're doing it, usually works out to be like a team of like maybe like so your classmates. So our classmates are maybe like about five people. I don't know if she's here today or not. Chandramukhi Devi Dasi from Peru and Sundara Radhika from Boise. And we had a couple PhDs. It was a nice program, nice group. We went through the first six cantos together, you know, the program. And we're trying to organize it now with my Shesha guy. I'm singing. Push it on because San Jose is an organized diploma center and Houston, and we're trying to get it together. It's a lot of work, you know, to do it so it's nice. And we're trying to get Braj Bihari in D.C. or somewhere to get it going on the East Coast. So maybe Hawaii, same thing we're talking about that. But the thing is, you kind of discuss it as a team, you know, you're going through the verses, and really, it's nice. And it was very nice because different people had different perspectives. And the lady's perspective on the Bhagavatam is just as intense as anybody else's, but it's so different. You know, looking at how Draupadi is feeling about the whole thing when this guy Ashwatthama chops her heads off her babies, you know. I can maybe meditate on it a little bit, but if you're actually a mother and have your kids and everything else, and you're reading this, it's like, you know, something you can really get into it. So different perspectives. One last thing here. I have this one, I'm really sure to find this. Okay. This is from, I think I've read this before. I'm going to move my thing off to the side there. Start meeting. We have start meeting too. As far as at least like five devotees use start meeting. There we go. Okay. And this is the Vrindavan Dham Mahimamrita. Okay. And this is by Prabodhananda Saraswati, who is incarnation of Tunga Vidya. And if you're facing Radha Madhava, he's on the left-hand side. Tunga means peak, apex, and Vidya means knowledge. So she's the apex of knowledge. And she's on the that side there. She's more like, you know, kind of has a tendency to give some kind of side with Krishna. So if Krishna's late for a tryst, and Lalita and everybody's all over, and where you been, what are you doing, you know, then Tunga Vidya might pipe in, well, give the guy a break. Yeah, let him make an explanation. You know, so she's Radha, you know, expansion of Radharani's humor. So she incarnated in Gauranga Leela as Prabodhananda Saraswati, the uncle of Gopal Bhatta, and of course high class, you know, South Indian Brahmin, but became a Gaudiya Vaishnava and wrote beautiful poems, prayers. He wrote the Vrindavan Dham Mahimamrita, which is a collection of shatakas, Jayom Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parivajakacharya, Ashtotra Shata. Ashtotra means eight, and Shata means 100. So 108. So shatakas. He wrote these collections of 100 verses, and maybe like 30 of them we have, you know. And it's incredible with this, you know, it, high class South Indian Brahmin, just becoming a sannyasi and wandering around Braja. And then also being an incarnation, you know, being from the Vidya. This is from the Shataka 15, and he says, and of course we can get the translation from, this is, somebody has a full translation. This is Kusakrata's translation. I shall tell you a mantra that is hidden from all the Vedas. Are you listening now? Don't go away. I shall tell you a mantra that is hidden from all the Vedas and is not manifested anywhere in the most confidential scriptures. He's going to tell us this. When a person chants this mantra, the great spiritual perfections come before his feet. And the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead stand in his hand. For a person who knows, who chants this mantra, there are no orders or prohibitions. A person who understands the dust of this mantra's lotus feet purifies those who know the rules of the Vedas. Yeah? This mantra is the sweetest nectar. It is the auspiciousness of all auspiciousness. It is filled with limitless, wonderful glory. Limitless, wonderful glory. It is the attainment of all attainments. It is the ultimate goal of all ultimate goals. It is the wild bliss of all wild blisses. Are you ready to buy, brothers and sisters? They say it is the secret of all secrets. Without thinking anything else, day and night, chant this mantra, Radha. And in one lecture, in Radhashtami lecture, my God, wow, watch your microphone here. One lecture, it was Radhashtami in London. Prabhupada says, Hare, Radhe, no difference. So all day long, chant this mantra, Hare, Hare, Hare. And, of course, illuminate it with her lover, her boyfriend. Hare Krishna and Balaram. Yeah, Hare Rama. I'll think anything else, day and night, chant this mantra. Are you going to do this? Am I creating a whole Jonestown cult here? Everybody's going to chant this mantra and become totally incapacitated socially? This mantra is what? This mantra is a flood of sweetness. Flood of sweetness. Churn from the sweetest nectars. It is the precious blood of the wild sweetness of the bliss of pure love. Pusha Gladys translation, key God. It is the precious flood of the wild sweetness of the bliss of pure love. O fortunate one, who can understand us? Who understands the meaning of this mantra? It is a flood of bliss flowing into the heart. In Prabhupada, London, Radhastami, Radhe Hare, no difference. There's one of a little monkey trying to take part in Krishna Leela. And, of course, you can contact us at our website, jayarama.us. So any final comments or anything else? I guess everybody's trying. Hare, 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 Hare.
Maharaj, where were you just reading from?
That's Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita. If you go to our website, why not? Bring it right up here. Okay. A little propaganda here. And go to jayarama.us, like United Snake, United Snakes, United Snakes of America. Okay. Here's our website. Done with Microsoft Word, by the way. You can make your own website using Word. You got, if you're new, you can go to Hello. And News is a periodical. And we've got Archives, and we've got Peru if you speak Spanish. So go to News. No, go to Archives. Okay? That explains our archives, and some of the stuff is in. It's a big mess, giant mess, kind of like that. But some stuff is organized. Okay? Yeah. Somebody's got to go directly. You go right here to Direct Access. Okay. We have all this stuff here. And Vaisheshika, one day he came to the class and he was smiling and chastising me. He said, I found your website. He said, it's 1 o'clock in the morning going through everything. So he has all these weird stuff where wine went wrong. That's a weird story we have. We made up, got halfway there. American Bhagavad Curriculum. These are a lot of files we have on, for studying. Nectar of Instruction 2. This is the Anuvritti. This is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's commentary, the Anuvritti. the Bhakti Alok by Bhakti Siddhanta. Okay, we have a songbook. Other things, we have American Baba, which is Sannyas thing. Okay. Asai is Anjana Studio Academy Encyclopedia, Next Instruction Promotion, PowerPoint shows, Bahula, Be Honest, Cow. We got her there. Yeah. But let's look down here for Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita, see if I got it there. Yeah. I use WebEx. WebEx? Not WebEx. Yeah, there it is. Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita. You can find it there. And then the actual citation is Shataka 15 out of the 35 Shatakas in 1733 to 1776. 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. In 1573, something or other for you and me. 1573, Lord Chaitanya invented for you and me. Okay, yeah, he did, almost. So any other comments, questions like that?
What was it under archives? What's the click that you click on?
If you go to my archives, you go to Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita, BDM.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's other things there. There's WSC. Let me explain the beginning. World Classical Literature. And that's Two Princes. That's a PowerPoint show and a Word document about Arjuna and Hamlet. So you got some stuff there. Yeah. Ugly England. That's a citation of all the nasty things that Winston Churchill said about England. Really frightening, you know. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh, I was just going to say, from now on, underneath all your classes, I'll put your website so it's easy for everyone to access.
Okay. Okay. We can enter into our monkey madness. Okay. So, thanking you all for your tolerance and association as usual. I guess we'll go look for some nectar to offer to Lord Nrisimhadev. For us, it's lunchtime. And chant Hare Krishna and try and get some impetus to do other activities today in Sri Krishna's service.
Jai.
Thank you,
Maharaj.
Radharani ki jai.
Jai.
Thank you, Maharaj.
See you next week. Hare bol.
Hare bol.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare bol.
Semana.